I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today we discuss addiction and recovery. Later in the hour, we hear about sober nights at the Cultural Center of Cape Cod, entertainment and social events that don't include drugs or alcohol. But first, drug education and prevention programs have never been more important than they are today. With addiction rates on the rise and overdose deaths at an all-time high, keeping adolescents and youth from starting to use drugs and alcohol and understanding the potential consequences if they do is essential to curbing the epidemic. Today we discuss a program that combines drug treatment and drug prevention. It's called Drug Story Theater. Joining us from our studios at WGBH is the founder of the program, Dr. Joseph Schrand, who is also an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and assistant child psychiatrist on the medical staff of Massachusetts General Hospital. Dr. Schrand, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Mindy. Thank you.
You developed a drug treatment program based on the IMAX approach, a model you developed for thinking about why people make the decisions they do. So tell us more about that.
Right. I'd be delighted to. The IMAX is now actually called the IM approach, and there are various reasons that go into that, but I won't go into those. The idea of the IM approach is rather than look at people as sick and broken, why not start looking at them as doing the best they can? And the IM is a current maximum potential. So if we start looking at people as doing the best they can at this moment in time, it doesn't mean we have to like it. It doesn't mean we have to condone it and say it's okay. It's not a free ride. You're held responsible. But rather than judge it, let's look at it again. And if you think about these words, again is like re, like to repeat something. Look is like spec, like a spectator. This is a position of respect. This is really critical. When we're working with addiction, mental health issues, or just buying a coffee someplace, it's very great to treat somebody else with respect because then they begin to feel valued. And when they feel valued, they begin to trust. And what we'll maybe talk about a little later on is the whole neurochemistry of trust, which is a remarkable part of who we are as human beings. You know, at this point in time, there's a lot of anxiety for all sorts of reasons, a lot of questions about respect and value and trust. So the IM, if you think about it, we are always responding to the world around and within us. And there are four domains that influence our IM. The home domain, and I don't think anyone's going to argue that your home has had an influence on who you are today. The social domain, which is the rest of the world. It's you and I and Nicole chatting about what we're going to be chatting about. There's a third domain, the first internal domain, the I see. How do I see myself? But more importantly, how do I think you see me? And then our biological domain of our brain and body. So all these things are interacting fluidly all the time, but I suggest that we are responding the best we can to these environments. You change those environments, you change the response. Hmm.
The slogan of Drug Story Theater is where the treatment of one becomes the prevention of many. So what's the therapeutic aspect of the show?
The therapeutic aspect has to do with this trust thing, this remarkable chemical called oxytocin. Not OxyContin, but oxytocin. Oxytocin is this chemical that's released when somebody says you're amazing, you're incredible. Mindy, this is the best show I ever heard. And you get that rush. That's oxytocin. Now, what the kids actually teach the audience in the show, because remember, this is a play that the kids have put together about their own stories. So their treatment is being up on stage, courageously telling the real story, not just a narrative, but a play. Nicole has taken what the kids have done in psychodrama, which is where they enact these stories, and turn the tell part into show part. So this is a real show. So that's where the treatment comes in. When these kids are giving back to the audience, and the audience stands up and applauds, they get this incredible rush of oxytocin. Now, why is this so important? There is another chemical of pleasure. All drugs and alcohol force the brain to make a chemical called dopamine. Very simple, very ancient molecule. It has been a companion traveling with us for billions of years through our evolution. Dopamine, we now know, interferes with oxytocin. So when you're using drugs or alcohol, you're interfering with the chemical of trust. And when you're using drugs and alcohol, you're having an effect on somebody else's brain. That's what our kids teach. So that's where the treatment is. The prevention part is that the audience, remember, when we first did this last year, our pilot year, these kids, our kids performed in front of more than 10,000 people in the South Shore of Massachusetts. And the audience takes a pre- and post-test survey, and we can track the data about the change in perception. That's what we're really looking at. As the kids in the audience learn about dopamine and oxytocin and parts of their brain, they can also begin to have a more educated approach to drugs and alcohol. We're not trying to scare anyone. No one's going to scare you out of using drugs or alcohol. If the brain is going to choose between fear and pleasure, it will choose pleasure every time. But what we teach kids is you get to choose. You can have the pleasure of drugs, but the price you're going to pay is trust. You decide which one's more important to you.
Also joining us from the WGBH studios, scriptwriter and co-director of the Drug Story Theater, Nicole Conlon-McComb. Welcome to you, Nicole.
Thanks, Mindy.
So part of your job is to write a production around the stories of these teen cast members. So explain the process for learning the cast stories and how you decide what aspects to incorporate in this larger storyline.
Sure. So as Dr. Schrein was mentioning, the participants go through what we call psychodrama, which is where they direct the stories of their lives using other cast members, and I observe those and take notes and pictures and sound and video recordings of those. And once I have lots and lots of material from the cast, I then kind of pick and choose which aspects of their stories we want to use to basically tell the story of the seduction of addiction to treatment and recovery of drug and alcohol addiction.
We have a clip from a performance of Drug Story Theater. Let's give a listen.
I had this one friend one time bugged me so bad to just smoke weed. He ended up doing coke the same night. We all start with just weed.
I'm not like you. I'll never do heroin.
I bet you say you never smoke weed either.
Dude, it's different. It's just weed.
I never thought I'd do heroin either. I started smoking when I was a kid. My grandma had no idea. She started coming home drunk. And she started noticing money was missing, and it just wasn't adding up. It wasn't until I got caught smoking at school that she noticed that all the bottles were empty in the liquor cabinet. She confronted me about my problem, but I didn't care. I know now, that's when I lost her respect.
Dude, that's what happened to me.
Exactly. Weed was all I needed for a long time. And then my girlfriend and I found spice. One day, I just wasn't getting high enough. So my buddy got us some perks. It was the best high I ever had. So I started doing pills. When one wasn't working, I started doing two at a time. Eventually, I had no money left, and some guy offered me cheap heroin. I swore I would only snort it, that I would never stick a needle in my arm. But look at me now.
Dude, I'm not like you, all right?
If you're not like me, then stop smoking weed.
So, Nicole, these are based on true stories of the cast members, right?
Yes, these are true stories of the cast members and other people that they've met along the way through their addiction and also through treatment and recovery. So the stories are true to the cast, and this is something, It's Just Weed comes up a lot in the recovery process and people even beforehand thinking it's not really a big deal. But through the stories that we learn from our cast members, many of them do start with weed and then graduate onto other drugs.
No. Dr. Schrein, I couldn't help but notice in there he talks about, that's when I lost the respect of my grandmother. There's that word respect again.
There it is. That's exactly right. And that's what our kids are learning, that it really comes down to respect. If you think about it, you know, when's the last time you got angry at someone treating you with respect? You know, you don't. Respect is a wonderful experience. So what these kids are, and by the way, those were Melvin was the one talking about using heroin, and Jonathan was the one saying, hey, it's just weed. And that line that Melvin says, when Jonathan says, but I'm not like you. And when Melvin says, if you're not like me, then stop smoking weed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the critical part. Because it really is a gateway. we know that you know, 90% or more of the kids who are on heroin started with weed. And there was a reference in there to something called spice, mm-hmm. which is not, you know, nutmeg. It's a synthetic marijuana, which, you know, for many years was actually legally sold at gas stations and other places. And kids would go in, they could buy this, and they would get really, really high, much more dangerous than many people really suspected. So spice, the synthetic marijuana, is a very, very dangerous drug.
How do you determine potential cast members?
We don't even have auditions. We just ask kids who want to come in and do it. So there's a program in Brockton through High Point Treatment Center, and I'm the chief of all the adolescent programs at High Point, called CASEL, Clean and Sober Teens Living Empowered. This is a short-term, two-week residential program for kids who have substance challenges. So I think all the kids so far have come through CASEL, but we are open to more kids coming in. If they want to reach Nicole or I, I'm at Dr. Schrand, DrSHRAND, at drugstorytheater.org. Nicole is Nicole, NICOLE, at drugstorytheater.org. And that's theater with an ER, because so many of our kids wind up there. So we are looking actually actively right now to put together a third cast of kids, hopefully to start in April. Our second cast of kids is actively in rehearsal right now. They'll have a premiere production in a local high school on Friday, and then their first public performance is going to be at the Citerion Theater in New Bedford on Thursday, February 9th.
Mm. Nicole, what's it been like working with these teens, many of whom who have no background in theater or acting?
It's really been a great experience, and part of the reason for that is that yes, this is a play, but it's really a play based on their lives and on their experiences. So it's been very powerful because we actually get them to tap into their real feelings. And that's something that you can't exactly teach to, especially to young actors. So that they have this already raw emotion in them is really wonderful. And to also see the transformation of these actors or non-actors of the cast from the first time that we meet them, when they kind of, you know, they're a little shy, they don't really want to talk too much, they don't really want to tell the story, and then through getting to know them, doing improv, doing psychodrama, to watch them kind of blossom into these performers, and then to finally see them on stage, it's just such a great experience. Mm.
Productions of Drug Story Theater are different depending on cast members, but each shows the progression of addiction. So I'm imagining there are common themes in how addiction progresses for teenagers?
Very much so. And I think the underlying brain science is what really drives this. I don't think any kid that I have met ever started using drugs with the intention of getting addicted, but many, many have. And they progress. So there is a tolerance that develops in the brain. You get high, it feels great, releases this chemical dopamine. But then it takes a little bit more to make the same release, and then maybe a different substance. And that really is how these things progress. Now, not every kid is going to progress. It's important to know. So even though 90% of kids on heroin started with weed, it's not that 90% of kids on weed are going to go on to heroin. Here are the numbers, Mindy, that I think are important to know. If you start using drugs or alcohol after the age of 21, one out of 25 people are at risk for lifelong addiction. But if you start using before the age of 18, and of course each of our kids have done that, you start using before the age of 18, that number goes from 1 in 25 to 1 in 4.
Wow.
And that's what it is. It's a wow number. It's a wow number. 1 in 3 if they've already started using any opioid, like prescription pain medicine. It's a wow number. The problem is we don't know which one.
Hmm. Who's the target audience for the show?
The target audience is middle and high school students primarily. And part of the reason that I think we've been successful, according to the feedback that we've gotten from the schools, is that these are teenagers talking to teenagers. It's not, you know, somebody who's older, an adult coming in and saying, don't do drugs, kids, mm-hmm. because that's really proven, essentially, to not be that effective. Whereas if you have a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 18-year-old coming in and saying, look, I've done this. It's not worth it. Don't do it. But the other part is parents. Frequently last year when we went to schools, we would do daytime performances, and then we would do a community show at night, and the parents could come. And part of the reason that that's really effective is because if the students have seen it during the day and the parents are able to go at night, then through theater, they can have a productive dialogue about drugs. Whereas a parent might not, you know, feel ultimately comfortable sitting down and having that conversation, the theater can jumpstart that conversation. Mm. The theater can jumpstart the conversation in classrooms where a teacher might say, I don't feel comfortable talking about drugs with the students, but they can talk about the play and they can talk about things that happened. So truly, we're trying to reach middle and high school students, but I do think it's important to reach parents and also the community at large.
And part of the remarkable thing about Drug Story Theater is that after the show, there's a live talk back. And I think for some people, this is even more powerful than the show because the audience gets to ask questions. And these kids, remember, they're in the original show, The Price You Pay, there were five kids and two parents, sometimes three parents of these kids. So there they all are, up in front of an audience, talking not just with the audience, but sometimes with each other. And I think the themes that come through are remarkable, including the wish that the parent could have done something, but the child saying, but I was so afraid that you would judge me, that you would shout at me, that you would do something to restrict me, which then just makes them more angry or anxious or sad. And some of the kids are using drugs to, you know, manage those feelings. So the parents were very articulate, saying, if you suspect something in your kid, follow your instinct. One of the things that I like to say as a child psychiatrist is to a parent, you are the expert. I am only the professional, but you are the expert in your kid. Never let anybody tell you differently. So what the parents in the audience got was really this way to talk with your kids so that it's an open dialogue without fear of being judged. That's also where the I am approach comes in. Even though it's not taught in Drug Story Theater, all the kids who come through Castle know it backwards and forwards, as do their parents. And they begin to realize that substance abuse is not a crime. It can lead to them, but it's not a crime. How can I help you understand why you're using drugs or alcohol, and how can we shift you from that form of pleasure back to this relationship where there's trust?
We're talking about Drug Story Theater. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about a program that combines drug treatment and drug prevention called Drug Story Theater with Dr. Joseph Schrand, who is an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and assistant child psychiatrist on the staff at Mass General Hospital. Also with us is Nicole Conlon-McComb, who is the scriptwriter and co-director of Drug Story Theater. The production takes the audience on a journey from the start of addiction through recovery. So the cast is reliving a very difficult time in their lives each time they perform. What do you hear from the cast about this? Is it difficult or really emotional for them?
Yeah, Mindy, it's such an important part of the treatment. It does stir up a lot of memories. It stirs up triggers. You know, you can't have a trigger to want to use a drug unless you have a memory. It stirs up a lot of things for the parents where, in the talkback especially, they may be learning things that they never knew. And we've had several times where one parent will look at their kid and just go, I didn't know that, you know, live in front of hundreds of people, you know. So, yes, what we learned from that first season was how much process needs to happen after the show. Because remember, we're learning as well. Right. This is only our second full season. So what is incorporated more and more after the rehearsals, even after the psychodrama rehearsals, is everybody sitting around and processing, well, what was that like? What happened? The psychodrama technique, a kid will say, I am Timmy, and I'm going to be the director. And then as the director, they tell their story, and the other kids enact it. And after that, Timmy will say, I'm not the director, I'm Timmy. Then we come back and say, okay, what was it like? So, yes, a lot of emotions get stirred up. a lot of anger in the parents, a lot of sadness in the parents, a lot of guilt in the kids, which is not always going to help keep them sober. What's going to help keep them sober is rebuilding that relationship between the parent and the child. When we talk to parents, you know, a parent may come in very angry that their kid has kept all these secrets from them. You know, this kid, they didn't tell me what they were doing. And the reframe for that is to say, well, if they weren't telling you, it's because they still cared what you thought. Mm-hmm. You know, why do we keep secrets? We keep secrets not because of the secret, but we worry, how is someone going to judge me if they know my secret?
Right. So what kind of relationships are forged between the cast members, and is that helpful in the recovery process?
The cast members really become very close, and I think that it's helpful for them in the recovery process because they're spending time with other people who are trying to be sober and people who have gone through a shared experience with them, whether they knew them previously or not. And it really, it kind of becomes like a little family, as silly as that might sound. But, you know, I mean, last year I was sort of like the stage mom and I was responsible for, you know, making sure that the kids all had a granola bar and all that stuff. And we really do try to take care of each other and look out for one another. But also sometimes when one of the kids was struggling and was thinking like, I don't know about sobriety, other ones would say to them, come on, you know, we're doing this, like it's worth it. So I think that the relationships that are formed are really exceptional.
Yeah. Dr. Shen, developing brains are different than those of adults, particularly in the division between the frontal cortex and the limbic system. So describe why this is important to understand in relation to substance use and addiction.
The adolescent brain is a remarkable one. And I don't know how many people out there who are listening have adolescent children. But the other thing I'd like to ask is how many have been adolescents? Right? And we all have. And we all have, we know from experience that sometimes we will do something impulsively and then not until later go, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. The reason is the brain is maturing following evolution. The limbic system, which is this very ancient, very deep part of the brain, I'm talking about structurally, it's very deep inside the brain, is responsible for impulses, for feelings, for memories, and it's also where addictions live. So it is this limbic brain that is actually in charge of the adolescent. The prefrontal cortex in particular, so if the audience, as long as you're not driving, put your, you know, hand on your forehead, right behind there is your prefrontal cortex. It is the part of the brain responsible for thinking, for rational thought, for analyzing a problem, for finding a solution, and for anticipating the consequence. What will happen next if I do this now? Critically important. And how many times have we done something impulsively and slapped our forehead as if it's trying to jumpstart that prefrontal cortex? Well, there the adolescent is. And this is, remember, in drug story theater, in between each scene, the kids step out of character and they do a PowerPoint presentation about the adolescent brain. So they are teaching the audience about this. So here you have an adolescent who has a brain that is impulsive, seeking pleasure. What are adolescents like? They want to be social, they want to seek pleasure, and they want new experiences. So this is what they do.
Nicole, talk about that brain science as part of production. How do you include this information in a way that doesn't get teens to tune out?
We really took a lot of time, I think, in developing how to disseminate this brain science, because very clearly, okay, now we're going to talk about your brain. That can be a part where teens would turn out, teen audiences would tune out. And so I think that we actually incorporate a fair amount of humor into this part of the presentation. And, you know, there's interaction in between the cast members, so it's not just a straight lecture to the audience. And also, having the PowerPoint, you know, the performers interact with that PowerPoint, so it does keep people engaged. We also have the audience shout things out, which, of course, is always great fun. So, you know, audience on three, one, two, three, and then the entire audience is shouting things like oxytocin. So I think that, you know, can help as well. But again, it's the teen performers with their great energy that helps to keep the teen audience involved.
Right. And let me just add one thing. The other part to it is because we're in the schools, and we know that at least some of those students out there like to be smart. So they have taken a pre-test survey, and then they take the post-test survey with many of the answers to the questions have been embedded directly in the PowerPoint. So we say to them, you know, you're going to take this pretest, answer, if you need to guess, just guess. But you're going to be learning stuff about this, and you're going to take a similar test afterwards. And some kids get really into that. Mm-hmm. But that's where the data has come from that has shown us the power within 45 minutes of what we can really do when we teach a kid how cool their brain is.
Yeah. Addicts face a lot of stigma. Do you hear from cast members that Drug Story Theater helps to remove some of that stigma?
Yes. Not only does it remove stigma, but again, that's where this oxytocin comes in, because the audience has helped these kids rekindle their value. And some of the most fun parts of Drug Story Theater were after the show, where our kids, remember, these are kids in recovery. A few weeks before, some of them had been using heroin, right? And now they're up on stage sharing the story, and they're like celebrities mm-hmm. to this audience. The audience, they can't have enough of them. They want to have lunch with them. They want to hang out with them. We don't let them share phone numbers or social media stuff. We learned that the hard way. Mm-hmm. But they love it. So, yes, we are absolutely fighting the stigma. The stigma is what prevents kids from getting treatment. It's what prevents parents from getting their kids treatment. There are millions and millions and millions of children in the United States who need treatment. Only 10% of them are going to get it because of that stigma. So you'll find in Drug Story Theater, we don't use words like disorder. We don't use words like a psychiatric illness. These kids have some condition. It's based on their brain. It's based on the environment. It's the best they can do, but they don't have to like it. They don't have to condone it. They held themselves responsible for it, and now they are doing something to change it.
Mm. You mentioned early in the program about the neurochemistry on respect. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the respect part is remarkable. What we find is when you are using this simple tool that I'm going to describe, we get a chance as human beings to interact with each other. So it's a brain tool. It's a somewhat clunky name, but it's called theory of mind. It's not like a theory of evolution. It's not like a theory of quantum mechanics. We can't see somebody's mind. So I have to theorize. What are you thinking or feeling? That's empathy. How are you feeling? But what we really want to know is, what are you thinking or feeling about me? That's what I want to know. That's why the stigma is so powerful. Because the kids are keeping these secrets because they want to be seen a certain way. They want to be seen as valuable. We all do. So from respect is a behavior. But anger is a feeling. So think about this. Anger is a feeling designed to change things. We get angry when we want somebody to do something different, start doing something, stop doing something. Parents may be angry with their kids because they want them to stop using drugs. But when you treat someone with anger, that person may feel disrespected. But as I said before, when's the last time you got angry at someone treating you with respect? Mm. So if anger is an emotion designed to change the behavior of somebody else, respect is a behavior designed to change the emotion of somebody else. That's what these kids are doing. And that's why when they are getting an applause, they are realizing how respected and valued they have been. They have given something to the audience, something very personal of themselves. And this audience has responded, often standing up en masse and giving an ovation. Mm.
Do cast members talk about particular aspects of this program that they've been especially helpful in their recovery?
Yeah, I think so. One of the kids early on said that he was doing drugs because he was bored. And we hear this a lot. And then he stopped doing drugs because that was part of his commitment to being sober while in the show. And in a talk back, he said he had no idea how much he could do now that he wasn't stoned. He was never bored because he now had his brain back on track. the relationships that they were building with each other and then outside with their families profoundly changed. What I heard was that coming to the rehearsal was great, but the ride back and forth with their parents was even better because they could talk with each other about what had happened, about what was going on, about, you know, how great it was that they were sober. It's pretty amazing.
A past cast member said in another interview that participating in the show helped him figure out how to have sober fun. So do you hear from other teens in recovery that it's a challenge to find ways to have fun while staying sober? Because it sounds like this one kid was the opposite for him.
It's a challenge if you have not changed your friend group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you, you know, and this is one of the real dilemmas, right? I mean, kids want to be social, and unfortunately, they sometimes will gravitate towards other kids who are doing drugs. And that has been a challenge, I think, for our kids. However, what they will say to each other and then to their friends is, you know what? If you're really my friend, help me stay sober. Because I think I have one of those one in four brains. I think I'm at risk for lifelong addiction. This isn't a fun thing anymore. Help me. And the vast majority of their friends do just that.
I think this is very interesting, this idea that parents come and then can have these difficult conversations with their kids, because for some parents that is a difficult conversation. I'm just wondering if you have advice for parents who have young kids. When do you start these conversations? Where do they begin? About what age?
I think that there's a precursor to it, Mindy, and that's part of why what we're trying to develop is actually a much longer curriculum for teaching kids about how cool their brains are. So I think if a parent wants to start educating their kid about their brain, and there are many ways to do that, we think that that will create a foundation so that around sixth grade, which is when these kids are beginning to really be aware, they can begin having the conversation. But this is always the advice I give to parents. Meet your kid where they are. Meet them where they are. So you may say, you know, kid may say, you know, I heard that Timmy was smoking weed. And you say, well, gee, well, what do you think weed is? Well, isn't that something out in the backyard? Well, if that's what they think it is, meet them there.
Mm-hmm.
But if a kid says, no, I understand it's cannabis and, you know, it's just become legal in Massachusetts and I don't know what to make of that. Then you have a discussion. Always, always check where your kid is first, because sometimes you may unwittingly impart information that they are just not ready to hear yet. So that's really the advice, is meet the kids where they are. But at dinner, hopefully, you know, or wherever you have a way where the family is together, if you develop a sustained approach where everything is fair game to discuss, everything, that you respect your kids, they respect you, that will set the foundation. One of the things that I like to say to parents is, it's much more interesting to be amazed at who your kid is than be disappointed who they aren't.
Mm, that's a great line. Drug Story Theater will be at the Zeitarian Theater in New Bedford Thursday, February 9th. We'll have more information about Dr. Schrand and the show at our website, capeandislands.org. Dr. Joseph Schrand and Nicole Conlon-McComb, thanks so much for joining us and for the project. It's really a wonderful thing.
It's our pleasure. The treatment of one truly does become the prevention of many.
Yeah. And also thanks to Tom Devlin and Doug Shugarts for production assistance in Boston. Coming up after a break, having fun and being social without drugs and alcohol.